Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 1:08 PM. The Pacific Summer Time today is October 5th, and I thought that today the 30-year yield was probably the most important chart out there because it is back above the trend mean for the first time since 2018. Now, this has been one of the the best indicators that we can probably monitor because it is reflective of how much faith there is in the ability of the U.S. government to be able to pay back their debt in a currency that is able to hold at least some of its purchasing power. Then there's also the potential for inflationary pressures to rise, probably faster than many at the Fed think is possible. And then, of course, we have the additional variable about just how willing is the Federal Reserve going to be to suppress yields and to try and come in and start buying these bonds and to certainly try to manage the yield curve. So these are all lots of unknown factors. One thing we know, though, is that with the yield rising, there's fewer people buying them than selling them. And then if yields are starting to rise, it's going to start putting pressure on the Federal Reserve. So then when we zoom in a little and look at the 10-year yield, well, it was also higher in here today and in a reasonably dynamic manner, more dynamic at least than any move we've had since the beginning of September, and coming back up towards the upper side of the range. Every time it's got up here to the 70 basis point level, it's failed. So if it's going to fail again, we should see a downward dynamic coming through in here tomorrow. With the 30-year back above the trend mean, then obviously people are going to start looking at the trend mean on the 10-year as well. And if we start seeing yields pushing higher than 1%, then it's going to be meaningful because it will certainly start to throw some attention onto the willingness of the Federal Reserve to, in fact, continue with its stimulus. The fact is that the size of their balance sheet has gone nowhere since May. They've been talking their book, and they've certainly been intimating that in the event that it was needed, they would continue to provide assistance, but so far they haven't had to. And stocks continue to rebound. The S&P 500 was up in a reasonably robust manner in here today, up about 1.5%. The NASDAQ was also in positive territory in here today, and certainly rebounding here from the 11,000 level. Both have broken short-term progressions of lower rally highs. The fact that the outlook for President Trump's health continues to improve is being viewed as positive by the market, but I think it's also important that part of the reason that he has been able to improve so quickly has been because not just that we've had significant breakthroughs in the kinds of new technologies that can deliver solutions in a short time frame, and Regeneron has certainly been one of the beneficiaries from enthusiasm about antibody-related solutions, but then there are older solutions that have been around for years and are now being deployed as well. So we have got two different vectors to approach the treatment of the coronavirus, and that is completely different to the environment that we had back in March. And the stock market is pricing in that enthusiasm, but the news and broad media have not yet been able to turn, or at least to adapt to what is in fact a new reality, because we can see that stock markets continue to do well. We can see that bond yields are starting to rise, and it's not just the 10-year or the 30-year in the USA, but the gilt yields were also positive in here today. Now, I think this is also rather interesting because there is a clear narrative being peddled that we're going to continue to see deflationary forces. But even bund yields were higher in here today by about 2 basis points. Now, they're still negative overall, and negative in a rather wide manner. But yet the yield has been pushing higher. When we think about the UK, there's obviously a lot of angst being expressed about the outlook for Brexit and the likelihood of a negotiated settlement. And There is still some hedging by the Bank of England saying that they may still move into negative yield or negative interest rates. And then, of course, there is the continued worry about the health of the economy, and then how quickly are we going to have a recovery start to come through, what that's going to mean in terms of jobs. Well, obviously, it's going to require stimulus in order to ensure that there is a reasonably smooth return to growth. But if we are in fact at the height of hysteria, then some of the most pessimistic estimates are unlikely to come true. Because I've seen estimates that half of all hotels are going to close, and I just don't see that. I can already see that people are becoming more social. In fact, Mrs. Tracy and I have been invited to three different birthday parties for adults over the course of the last 3 or 4 days. Now, this is in a city like Los Angeles, where people have been socially isolating and been relatively in tune with the social distancing parameters for quite some time. But they're increasingly being laid by the wayside. And people are engaging in more social activity, whether that is in their homes or in their gardens or in a more social environment like the country club. And that's also, I think, quite new. What it also tells us is that people are willing to do things that are outside of the official strictures because they understand what the risks are. It's just that the bureaucracy hasn't caught up with it yet. And that's potentially what bond yields are telling us, that there is a need now for a, or there is less need for the clear safety net of bonds, that there is likely to be considerable stimulus that is promoted or designed at promoting further economic growth. And that's also why the stock market continues to do reasonably well. So, and it was a pretty positive day right across the boards. So the Euro Stoxx index is now back above its trend mean. It's been largely range-bound for most of the last 4 months, but it does now look like it is pushing back up towards the upper side of the range. Then the FTSE 100 has also started to firm in here, and that is despite the fact that the energy sector and the banking sector have weighed heavily on that. But then oil prices were up by $2.20 in here today. So this is a really quite impressive upward dynamic. And what I find particularly interesting is you can barely see it because of the incredible volatility that we had back in January and March. But this is a significant move. We're talking about a 5% move in a single day. And it clearly suggests that we've got a failed downside break below $40. If it can follow through on the upside and push back above the trend mean, well, then we're back in a recovery scenario. Then it's also quite clear that there is demand coming back in for natural gas. There is another tropical storm moving back towards the Gulf Coast. So that could potentially inhibit additional supply gains. When we look at the continuation chart for natural gas, it's still really very depressed, but there is a clear trend of recovery. Every time it gets down to below $2, it rebounds because of the potential for supply to just simply get taken out of the market. That is the real game changer of shale oil and gas. It is The supply from these unconventional sources is elastic and can be catered to the price environment. So they can simply stop drilling and then prices start to recover. And when they recover, they start drilling again. But it also means that supply increases significantly as we approach the upper side of the range. And every time it gets above the $4.50 level, it doesn't seem to hold it for very long. And that has been going on now for more than 10 years. So this has been an incredibly prolonged period of ranging, for natural gas, and it's as a direct result of the unconventional sources of supply. And I think that this is a pretty good analogue of what we can anticipate from oil prices. Now, the trough-to-peak swing in natural gas is well in excess of 100%, and it's quite likely that that's what we're going to see with oil prices as well, that every time the price comes back below $40, supply is going to get taken in, drilling will stop, and the USA is now the marginal source of production for the global energy sector, or for the crude oil sector at a minimum. We are also starting to see increasing enthusiasm for investment in alternative sources of energy, and the solar ETF continues to accelerate higher. It was up additionally in here today, and it is now rallying in an extremely impressive manner, and quite likely that we're going to see the $100 level tested over the course of the next few weeks. That's the next area of potential resistance. The timing of the beginning of this ETF to coincide with the beginning of the crash in 2008 has obviously changed the outlook in terms of what future potential looks like, but certainly there is potential for additional upside here. I saw an article, and I'll write more about this tomorrow, but that hydrogen investment is certainly wrapping up in Europe, and that most of the European stimulus package is directed at green energy, and I think that's really what we're starting to see reflected in the performance of some of these ETFs. So the wind ETF has also pushed up on the upside here and continues to extend its breakout, and it remains a really quite impressive advance overall. The Chinese market remains closed, but the offshore renminbi continues to strengthen, and it pushed on to a new recovery high in here today. That's really quite good news for the Asian currencies. The Taiwan dollar, for example, hit a new recovery high. I don't think it's been this high since 2011. The Asia dollar index is steadying here in the region of 105, and there's the potential that it is going to be able to break its sequence of lower rally highs. When we look at, for example, some of the US dollar denominated ETFs, I think it gives us a picture of just how profound the underperformance of Asian currencies has been relative to the US dollar. The Philippine ETF, denominated in US dollars, has been ranging below 30 now for most of the year, but it was a range-bound environment from 2013 onwards. Part of the reason for that was because of the weakness of the peso during most of that time. Now, the peso has been one of the strongest currencies in the region this year, and the ETF is really just beginning to reflect that in terms of interest, because eventually we're going to start to see that investors do start to look at emerging markets once more. If the Asia dollar index clearly breaks its downtrend, then investors will have the benefit of growth, potentially higher interest rates, stronger currencies, and then the potential for momentum as well in some of these emerging markets. We're not quite there yet, because the dollar's uptrend against these currencies has not really reached the eyes of international investors, and Wall Street continues to do well on a nominal basis. So it's really when we start to see relative underperformance by Wall Street, that'll be the clear catalyst to get people to start paying attention to emerging markets once more. When, for example, we look at the Indonesian ETF, the rupiah has been reasonably steady of late, and it's very similar in terms of the trend relative to the Philippine ETF as well. It's been ranging again below this long-term range for most of this year, but it was range-bound overall. I think it is important to just contrast that with the nominal price index, because the nominal price index went up a lot between 2012 and about 2018, but That was all based on currency depreciation. When we then think about what that means in terms of the relative absolute performance, a lot really hinges on the outlook for the US dollar. And if the US dollar is at a point where it's likely peaking, then that will be, I think, a significant factor for emerging markets in 2021. So there is the clear scope here that with the renminbi strengthening, it is really taking the brakes off in terms of growth and outperformance potential for a number of emerging markets. Then when we look at the Nifty index, it's rebounded over the last few weeks in nominal terms. The rupee has also been strengthening and is consolidating above the trend mean right now, so that's also rather positive. When we look at, for example, a UK denominated investment trust looking at India, then again, it's a very similar pattern to what we've seen internationally. And we've got the big pullbacks and then right in the region of the trend mean. So there is scope here that we're going to see some emerging, higher growth emerging markets doing better. But then there is also the clear potential that we're going to have trouble in some other emerging markets. There is an increasing likelihood that the Argentine peso is going to have to be devalued. The Zambian government is negotiating with its creditors. They're in technically in default right now. And then, of course, there is Turkey, where there is obviously a downward pressure on the Turkish lira, and then this acrimonious attitude between the government and international creditors. And so there are certainly risks still outstanding in the emerging markets, and the outlook for the coronavirus obviously impinges upon their ability to continue to do well. Then, when we think about the big resources providers, then the Brazilian market has rebounded from the region of the trend mean in here today. When we then think about, for example, a Brazilian ETF, I think we can get a better idea of just what kind of effect the real has had on total return from a foreign investor's perspective. It is starting to steady, but it's not doing quite as well, for example, as the mining index. And we had quite a bit of volatility in terms of the industrial resources last week, but the mining sector has continued to steady, and it was in positive territory in here today. I don't really think that this is anything other than a pause of consolidation. There's quite likely to be a great deal of stimulus coming through from emerging markets and developed markets next year. There's likely to be a clear reflation trade, and governments are likely to throw caution to the wind in terms of stimulus. So that is favorable for gold, and gold prices were in positive territory in here today, despite the fact that government bond yields were higher. And it is now back above the $1,900 level. Not in an especially dynamic manner, but at least it is higher, and so far holding the lower side of this range that's been evolving since the beginning of August. Silver prices were also in positive territory, up 47 cents. Coming back towards this $25 area, that's a bit of a psychological level. If it can sustain a move back above 25, then we can start to think about a failed downside break. But it might be a little early to suggest that that's the case right now. Then I think Bitcoin is looking rather interesting right now. It's still with a 10,000 handle. It has so far held the move above 10,000 and found support there at the beginning of September. The bigger picture here is that 10,000 had been an area of resistance for a good half of 2019 and early 2020. It's now offering at least a near-term support, If it can pull away from here, then there is a clear likelihood that it will go back up and test the peaks from back in 2017. So, how well it can hold this break above 10,000 is going to be rather instructive in terms of the medium-term potential. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.